Good morning and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Larry Kay from Chicago, and I'm going to be the host for the presentation this morning. Today is Sunday, August 18th, 2024. The share ID numbers for Friday, August 16th, for the 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting, that number is 21,664. That's 21664. For the 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting, 21,665. That's 21665. This morning, A Vision for You presents, The Food is Down, So Now What? Our speaker is going to share her experience implementing the steps and, of course, the results that followed. So the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells us that if you got this thing, this illness that we call alcoholism, or in our case, compulsive overeating, your only real shot at getting better, I mean, really, is what the book describes as a complete psychic change. Now, you will not have a complete psychic change in the Fellowship of Overeaters Anonymous. Now, why is that? Because the Fellowship of Overeaters Anonymous was not designed to produce a complete psychic change in a compulsive overeater like us. No, the Fellowship of Overeaters Anonymous was designed as a place for the compulsive overeater to come and receive love and support while they have a complete psychic change. But that complete psychic change happens in the program. Now, the program is the first 164 pages of the book called Alcoholics Anonymous, which is, of course, our basic text. And like any textbook, it's meant to be gone through with a teacher, Sherpa, if you will, right? And we happen to call our teacher sponsor. You know, that's the deal. The program is the steps. Everything else is a handrail, a very necessary handrail as we navigate the steps. And it's incredibly important that we understand that. So this morning, we have a speaker that will go over her encounter with the practical program of spiritual action, the implementation of the steps that led to a result. You know, what result are we talking about? Well, a complete psychic change. She had, it's often referred to as a spiritual awakening, sufficient to, among other things, eradicate the mental obsession, as was promised. And the miraculous thing about that is that promise holds true, provided that she remains in fit spiritual condition. And this fit spiritual condition remains intact for just as long as we work the steps as they were intended to be worked, for the rest of our lives. So the first three steps are often called the preparation steps, in that, you know, they are the preparation for the program of action. So if you take the 12 steps, 1, 2, and 3 prepare us for the work. The work itself, the actual recovery, is steps 4 through 9. And then steps 10, 11, and 12 are designed as the maintenance and growth work. And that's how we maintain and grow what we get from 4 through 9, which is, of course, recovery, a relationship with power. And when we begin to see our spiritual program in this life context, if you will, we acknowledge that life is not designed as a series of, well, I don't know, like calculus problems. You know, rather, life is about movement. You know, life is about action, often simple actions. Not easy, but simple actions. We get to move through different terrains. We get to move through different circumstances. And whatever emotions we experience as we move along this recovery journey, because we're human, well, we may feel, you know, some things, probably will, those emotions just merely serve as a guide to the navigation system to keep us moving, to take action or not. The choice really, you know, becomes ours. Now, all that said, if I've got this thing called alcoholism, if I put the food down, I'm very quickly in a horrible physical and emotional state when I put the food down. You know, so it's paramount, it's crucial that I immerse myself in the steps immediately. Because if I wait, I will never cross the bridge to ultimate freedom that comes from having a revolutionary psychic change. Now, why is that? It doesn't seem fair. Because as I flop around in uncomfortability, just kind of like you picture a fish out of water, right? I'll do practically anything to experience that sense of ease and comfort that comes, as the book tells us, at once, the book tells me, from re-entering the water. You know, the ease and comfort that a fish gets from re-entering the water is really no different than what the compulsive overeater gets in an unrecovered state from re-entering the ease and comfort that comes from ingesting, you know, my alcoholic foods and for many of us, the food behaviors associated with that. It's really the same dynamic. In other words, we either are overcome with an overwhelming sense of ease from the food, or we must be overcome with an overwhelming sense of ease from a power greater than ourselves. You know, we either feast on the bounty of ease and comfort, or we get to surrender to the currents of a wisdom greater than ourselves. And that's going to be our choice in program. So joining us this morning to share her experience is Shanna C. And Shanna is from Tennessee. She's a dedicated member of Overeaters Anonymous. She is committed to the practice and teaching of the 12 steps and the 12 traditions as a way of life. So it's with gratitude. Please join me in welcoming Shanna C. to the line. Shanna, good morning to you.
Good morning, Larry. This is Shanna C., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater from Tennessee. Recovered through God's grace and mercy. Just I couldn't be happier to be here and more grateful and honored to be asked to do anything for Overeaters Anonymous. That intro, okay, I just want to say if anyone on this line does not hear me at all, everything that Larry said, do that, okay? So, oh, my God, such a wonderful, wonderful way to start the morning. I had no idea what to say. I was praying and asking the God of my understanding to get me out of the way and to grant me humility to tell the truth. I'm by no means a spiritual guru. I by no means am a fitness expert or whatever. I have no idea how in the world this wonderful experience has happened, this entire psychic change has happened, other than the fact that there is something greater than me that obviously knows who I am, heard me cry out for help, enabled me to put the food down, and gave me a way to live. So once the food is down, now what, right? And I'll start with just saying this very meeting called A Vision for You, named after our basic texts, chapter 11. And one of the things that really just jumped out at me is what it feels like to put the food down but have no way to live. And that feeling of, oh, my God, you know, what now? But then how that gets transformed to, oh, the food is down. Now what? Okay. So that in and of itself is just, it's all about perspective, but I can't bring about that change in perspective on my own. And it changes from day to day because it's a daily thing. So what I do want to do is I do want to read a chapter, this page in the Big Book, out of Alcoholics Anonymous, page 151. And I'm going to replace the word alcohol and all of that with eating and food, okay? Okay, so for most normal folks, drinking or eating means conviviality, companionship, and colorful imagination. It means release from care, boredom, and worry. It is joyous intimacy with friends and a feeling that life is good. But not so with us in those last few days of heavy eating and binging. The old pleasures are gone. They were but memories. Never could we recapture the great moments of the past. There was an insistent yearning to enjoy life as we once did and a heartbreaking obsession that some new miracle of control would enable us to do it. There was always one more attempt and one more failure. The less people tolerated us, the more we withdrew from society and life itself. As we became subjects of King Food, shivering denizens of his mad realm, the chilling vapor that his loneliness settled down. It thickened, ever becoming blacker. Some of us sought out sordid places, hoping to find understanding, companionship, and approval. Momentarily, we did. Then would come the oblivion and the awful awakening to face the hideous four horsemen, terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. Unhappy eaters, compulsive overeaters who read this page will understand. Now and then, a serious eater, being abstinent, not eating, food's down, you know, whatever, in the moment says, I don't miss it at all. I feel better, work better, having a better time. As ex-problem eaters, we smile at such a sally. We know our friend is like a boy whistling in the dark to keep up his spirits. He fools himself. Inwardly, he would give anything to get a half a dozen bites and get away with them. He will presently try the old game again, for he isn't happy about his abstinence. He cannot picture life with or without the food. Someday, he will be unable to imagine life with the food or without it. He will know loneliness as such few do. He will be at the jumping off place. He will wish for the end. You know, and that's me, my experience back several times. You know, I got into recovery back in 2008 for, you know, in another fellowship. And, you know, one of the things that I learned there was that, you know, that had to be put down first or that was going to kill me quicker than anything. And then I had all these other issues crop up, you know, subsequent to that. But the food has always been an issue. I've been a compulsive overeater looking back now since I was a little girl. Had weight problems off and on, had the eating disorder, developed the eating disorder in middle school, where I tried to fix the weight problem through all different kinds of means, you know, bulimia and overexercise, and couldn't start myself too well. and that's a blessing, really, looking back, and was never really unable to make myself vomit or anything like that. I tried, believe me, but it didn't work. So I was very much a diet pill and laxative user all through high school. And the weight, of course, fluctuated up and down, and, you know, and the binging and stuff. And I thought everybody ate that way. When people would call me out on it, I, you know, blew them off and, you know, whatever. And that's the thing, too, with me. I was never someone who got hugely overweight. But it was enough where people would, you know, notice if I'd lost weight. And they would tell me how great I looked or whatever. But I never got too thin, too thin to where people were really that worried about me. I will say that when I was little, I was force fed. I didn't really like eating very much. When I was a little girl, my mom would, she just in her own illness and her own ways of doing things, in her own idea of how a parent should treat a child or how a child should treat a parent, you know, you had to clean your plate, and she would fix enough food. My brother told me, she goes, Mom would feed you big, large, adult-sized portions and make you sit down and eat it all until you, you know, finished it. And I remember doing that all the time and not being able to get up from the table and threatened with spankings and things like that. And I would cry. My stomach would be so full, so full. And I would be so sick, but she said, you eat every bite. And I'm sorry. That's just a painful one right there, but she was doing the best she could with the knowledge and the power that she had at the time. And she didn't grow up an easy way either. She was doing what she was taught to do. You know what I mean? She didn't know. She didn't know she was harming me. But nonetheless, I'm not that five-year-old little girl anymore. And I can't continue to go back and blame and cast blame over how I was treated, you know, as a kid or whatever, and use that as an excuse to continue on with the behavior that I am now. What, you know, but I remember that. And I remember not, you know, being in that situation and also too overhearing how she would talk bad about me to her friends. You know, when her friends would come over to talk about how fat I was. And, oh my God, you wouldn't believe the size that she's wearing, and you wouldn't believe this. And, you know, and it was the constant from then on. Boys will never like you if you're fat. You need to quit eating that junk. You need to stop, you know. You'd be so pretty if you just lose weight. And I'm just like, you know, every time I turned around, it was somebody's going to say something to me about my weight. And I remember looking at myself and seeing a lot of people that were probably a lot bigger than me or whatnot, and they were just happy, and nobody even seemed to make fun of them. But it was a constant, relentless thing with me growing up. And so it became my obsession that somehow, someday, I'm going to control and enjoy this weight. And, you know, enjoying food and enjoying anything really felt like it was wrong. Didn't really realize that until, you know, countless numbers of inventory later. And but anyway, the bottom line is, whether that happened to me and it caused me to become a compulsive overeater, I don't know. Whether the force feeding created a habit, I don't know. All I know that for me, when there are certain times and certain things that if I ingest, I can't stop once I start. You know, and there are a lot of, and I don't believe that my mother actually made me a compulsive overeater. I believe that, you know, because for me, had I gotten out of that situation grown up and was able to look back at that and be like, oh, yeah, Mom made me eat. I grew up. I lost the weight. I know how to eat better now. Then I would, you know, and I have the power to change it. Then I wouldn't need to be sitting right here right now. I wouldn't identify so closely to people who eat certain ingredients. And then they can't stop once they ingest those certain ingredients, you know. And I wouldn't be able to identify with, okay, I could control it this time. And then, you know, then I start eating again and then I can't stop, no matter how great the necessity or the wish. So that in and of itself, I don't believe my mom had the power to make my body different than a normal eater. So I don't believe my upbringing made me a compulsive overeater. Did it cause some trauma? Yes. But once I work through the trauma and get through that, you know, technically I should be able to eat normally, right? But the bottom line is I can't still. I needed power. And so that mental component and that mental obsession is, once that food is down, now what? And so by the time I got to recovery, real recovery, I had already tried working the 12 steps in the other fellowship, thinking that this problem would go away, kind of like, you know, there are plenty of people in other programs that say, for instance, smoke cigarettes. And they work the 12 steps in that program, and then they decide to put down the cigarettes, and they don't need to go and join Smokers Anonymous. Some people do, whatever, no judgment if you have to, but there are plenty of people like that. There are plenty of people who are in the other fellowship that are able to work the 12 steps, put down the food and see, okay, well, it's, they can take it or leave it. And then there's me. And it's like, I tried doing that, and I had a lot of people telling me, yeah, it's possible. You don't need to join another fellowship in order to, it's all about willingness and reliance upon God and da 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 da. Okay, well, I did that. I did it more than once, and I tried it. And by the September 30th of 2019, I had gotten to the point to where I was speaking all over Southwest Florida in the other program. My sponsor in that program is a circuit speaker sponsor. I was living out of the Big Book in steps 10, 11, and 12. And for those who are new who don't know what that means, what that means is I had gone through all the 12 steps out of the Big Book. I had surrendered my will and life over to the care of God as I understood him, found my grocer handicaps and inventory. I'd made quite a bit of drastic amends and that had revolutionized my whole outlook toward life. I was having miracles happen in my life daily. I was reasonably happy. And I was doing the deal. I was sponsoring women. I was an active member of my home group there, and you know, as good as life can be on earth, it was good, except for the fact I wanted to wake up. I woke up every morning, wanted to die because the food was eating me alive. No pun intended. You know, and what's really cool is in that other fellowship, the sponsor that I had at the time could tell something was kind of up with me, and I didn't really want to share it with her because I assumed that this was an outside issue in that fellowship. But I got honest with her and I said, I'm struggling with the food and I don't know what to do. And I'm scared of telling you this because I'm afraid you're going to, tell me a bunch of stuff that people have already told me. And she said, honey, if you need help, you're not breaking tradition here if you go get outside help from another fellowship. You need the identification. That tradition that doesn't mean that you're breaking tradition by getting outside help. The only requirement for membership here is the desire to stop using the substance we're talking about. Oh, and thank God I had a sponsor who is steeped in the traditions and understood what they meant, because she actually saved my life. Because if it wasn't for her, I wouldn't have had the courage to get on this line a few days later and listen to someone sharing her story. And guess what? She was also a member of that other fellowship. She also ate like I did, felt like I did, and she was reading my mail. Because that morning I woke up, it was after I had the food was down for a couple of days, because I had tried the whole food plan thing, years prior, and I remembered how I felt when I was abstaining from the alcoholic ingredients and I was following a food plan. But up until that point, I had been working with another sponsor who was pretty much adamant against a structured food plan, but was all about the steps and all about working and trusting and relying upon the God of our understanding and all of that. And I get that, and that's all true. But what I have come to realize now, that when I first started working with her, I hadn't fully conceded to my innermost self that I was a compulsive overeater also. At that time, I thought I was just, an alcoholic that had a bad habit of eating. And that if I, get some identification or whatnot with some compulsive overeaters, that I could put this down and somehow join the upper echelon of people who are, I don't know, with God closer or something. Like it was an option. I looked at it as an optional kind of thing. And another member of this fellowship talks about how so many don't understand the seriousness and severity of compulsive overeating. And that was me until 2019, September 30th of 2019, when I woke up one morning and I said, God, I don't know what else to do. I've tried everything. The food is killing me. You're either going to have to lift this off of me or enable me to live with it somehow, because I can't do this. I don't know what to do anymore. I want to die. And here I am. I know you're real. But what is the problem? I don't get it. Please help. And please, and if you do, want to help me, whatever, I'm willing to do absolutely anything. I'm willing to help others with this too. And something inside of me said, pick up that phone and get on a vision for you. And I just so happened to have a notebook with a number in it. And I get on and I listen. And I now, soon-to-be sponsor, was telling her story. And she's still my sponsor today. She's been a godsend. And it wasn't her. She'd be the first to admit that it wasn't her. She was just so suiting up and showing up. She calls herself another bozo on the bus. But she was there when I needed her. After her talk or whatever, I wasn't expecting her to call me back. But I called her and I said, I need your help. Please help me. And she called me back. It was either that day or the next day. And she agreed to help me. She just so happened to have a spot, sponsorship spot, open up that week. And she stays pretty busy. So for that to happen, I knew it's what I needed. But anyway, the food had been down a couple of days because I had tried to, And then what she immediately had me do is start reading and start praying every day. Ask the God of your understanding to keep you sober, abstinent, and sane, and for the willingness and the ability to stick with that food plan. And I do that daily. And so far, so good. And subsequent to that, she had me read through the big book with her. We worked through the steps together, step one, all of it straight out of the big book, the directions, you know, did the inventory. I, you know, gave my will and life over to the care of God as I understood him, you know, per the directions, meaning that this obsession has been removed. I am keenly aware now that I am bodily and mentally different than a normal eater. Once I start ingesting these alcoholic ingredients that I made a list of, that I cannot stop once I start. I started there. You know, that list has expanded. Some have been taken off. Some have been added. You know, alcoholic behaviors, some have been added. Some have been taken away. You know, it's just that uncovering, discovering, discarding process that has happened with me as far as the food and stuff goes. And, but in step three, it was, okay, I promise, you know, that if God can keep this off of me, that I'm willing to share everything about this aspect of my life with others who may need help. And I don't get to manage what my recovery looks like. And somehow, the God of my understanding works it out to where I am able to be in two recovery programs at once and help people. And I don't have to manage it. And thank God for that. There is structure. I need structure, but it's not a rigid kind of structure to where it's, you know, I can't explain it. It's, you know, our big book talks about the desire to find God must come from within. There's something within me that I guess that entire psychic change that has happened is truly, truly for me, the fear of breaking that connection with the God of my understanding and breaking that connection with those I love in my life and the people in my life now far outweighs the desire to eat. You know, there's nothing better. There's not a bite in the world. There's not a food in the world that can take the place of experiencing the reality of the consciousness and the presence of the God of my understanding in my life. Better than anything I've ever tasted, you know. So that's what I crave the most. And when I can recognize that, that's when I'm able to go and truly live in steps 10, 11, and 12, where I'm continuing to take that personal inventory, you know, and maintain that. You know, it's like this. The mental obsession, those strange mental blank spots that would come, oh, I can have this now. And I forget, you know, because that's part of the mental obsession. It's not that I'm always thinking about food. I'm more keenly aware now than I've ever been of what I can and cannot eat. It's like this. Okay, say someone loses their leg. You know, it's obvious, you know, that they cannot walk. And they realize they cannot walk. If they try to get up and walk, they're going to fall unless they have some sort of help. You know, I'm going to fall. I am powerless over food, like, period. Just because I've worked the steps and have a relationship with God and doing this deal and somehow my past has become my greatest asset and I can help people now, it doesn't change the fact that my body will not process those ingredients. Like, they just don't. They don't. What happens is I start eating this stuff, it creates an allergic reaction. That allergic reaction is a craving for more and more and more of that particular ingredient or something like it or whatever. That's never going to change. You know, I used to think that, you know, if I work the steps and do all the things to get that connection with God, that God was so powerful that he would remove it and I would be normal. That's a lie for me. I mean, that's the part of the twisted thinking that happens sometimes. But I'm more keenly aware of what I can and cannot eat now, but I'm also aware that I'm powerless, that left to my own devices, I will pick it back up again. Now, am I going around terrified all the time and white knuckling? No, that's the beauty of it. Otherwise, I would look like someone sitting around in a chair waiting for something bad to happen with a fly, you know, like somebody waiting for a fly to land on them so they can swat it with a fly swat. Like, how big of a waste of time is that? You know, and as far as inventory and stuff goes, I've there for the longest time, I didn't realize it because I was so scared of being imperfect and not having it all figured out, that my inventories would be so in depth. I would just constantly inventory myself, inventory, and you know, and I've even had people be like, okay, Shanna, you know, I get that you're inventorying, but this is a little too much. I mean, who are you thinking about most of the time now with this constant inventorying, and you're coming up with the same stuff? You're thinking of you. I didn't realize how I was getting into the belly button gazing. I was that person sitting around waiting for the fly to land so I can swat it. How useless. And it was all because of the fear of not being perfect enough and not having a message good enough and not being willing to share it because it's got to be perfect, or the food Nazis are going to come after me, or I'm going to get, you know, my food plan's not good enough, and if I call this one, they're going to criticize, or if, you know, this one can eat this and I can't, am I doing it wrong? Those are the kind of thoughts. Oh my God, I eat a food and I like it. Does that mean I'm, you know, this is an alcoholic food? You know, it's just this constant. That's the kind of stuff that happens with me when I'm not in neutrality. It's not anything to beat myself up over. I've learned it's just part of the illness. And if I'm aware of it, I can see it when I'm connected with the God of my understanding and I'm doing the work. And I can pause and I can relax. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Take it easy. Ask God for the right thought or action per, you know, 84 through 88. And those are the pages out of the big book that I read every morning. Those are my walking around steps. Those are my upon awakening directions. Those are what I do throughout the day. And when I retire at night, there's that safety net of more inventory. But it's not, I don't spend hours and hours and hours doing it. And throughout the day, I'm constantly reminding myself I'm no longer running the show. I'm reminding myself that, you know, I'm not running the show and I'm asking God's will be done. You know, when I start to get really disturbed about things, I'm asking God for the right thought or action. I'm calling someone, you know, to get a clearer understanding about it, doing the 10th step, whatever you want to call it. You know, it's usually with my sponsor or somebody, you know, and then doing my best and asking God for the willingness and ability to get out of the way and to try to get out of my head by helping someone else. And sometimes that looks like a bunch of outreach calls. Sometimes that looks like going to a meeting. Sometimes that looks like being, you know, present with my family and being encouraging. It's all upon the fact that I get to rely upon the God of my understanding for the next step, the next right thing. And not leaning on my own thinking, but just trusting that even though my thinking may be messed up sometimes, that there's grace there that's going to, it's going to fix whatever it is, provided, you know, that I'm in earnest. You know, it's one of the things, you know, in step 8 and 9, you know, we are going to make mistakes, but if we are in earnest, they will not drag us down. We can capitalize them. You know, we can let God demonstrate through us what he can do. You know, if my abstinence and recovery from compulsive overeating depended upon my ability to do it perfectly every single time, I would not be talking today. And one of the really cool things that happens as a result of having this new way of living is, number one, oh my God, once the food is down and I've been given a new way to live, free from the obsession to diet, free from the obsession to over-exercise, free from the obsession to constantly impress, getting the perfect food, is it going to taste good? Is it going to be what I want? Is it going to be enough? Is it going to be this? Oh, my God, I'm scared of liking it too much. Oh, my God, I'm scared of disliking it too much. Those are the kind of thoughts that go through your head. You know, one thing I've learned is it's okay to enjoy my food. It's not a sin. Oh, and you mean I get ease and it's not a sin to be hungry? Oh, I'm not doing something wrong just because my stomach empties of its contents, which is normal and a normal reaction. And, you know, this is what happens in digestion, even for a compulsive overeater. I don't have to freak out just because I'm hungry. You know, that I'm not going to starve. I've learned to trust that the God of my understanding is not going to let me starve. They may be uncomfortable for a little bit, but I'm able to pause in those moments and say, God, help. You know I'll eat unless you help me. What's the next right thing? What can I do to get out of myself? and I get to do that. And then sure enough, I get excited about something. I get fearful about something. I pause and I pray. And the next thing you know, I'm getting a fellow sending me a text. Hey, what's going on? How are you? And I had a pretty exciting moment a couple of weeks ago. My husband and I were going out to look at a property or getting ready to make an offer on a house that we really, really loved. And it was just an exciting process. And one of the things that in pages 84 through 88 talks about, we're in much less danger, anger, frustration, or something like that. Talking about how God shows up in so many different ways without us expecting it. And let's see. On page 88, where it talks about, as we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful. Excitement for me can be, and happiness can be a form of agitation because I'm like, ooh, let's celebrate, let's go eat, you know. And I don't even realize it, but what ends up happening is God knows more than I do, and he's able to direct, because I did ask him to direct my thinking that day. And so what ends up happening is I'm, getting ready to go to lunch after looking at this beautiful home. We're deciding on whether or not to make an offer on this place, and we're pulling into the restaurant parking lot, and I get a text from a fellow. How are you doing? It's another compulsive overeater. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Thank you, God. It got my mind off of me, and I was able to do a quick, hey, committal of my food, a quick, prayer, and I'm not alone. And that was the best meal I had in a long time, not because the food was that great, but because, holy cow, the God of my understanding showed up using another member of the fellowship, reminding me I'm not alone. And yes, I'm still a compulsive overeater, even though I'm happy. And I could, this is, God's keeping me safe and protected. Those are the 10-step promises. And anyway, it talks about here, it says, we're no longer running show humbly, saying to ourselves, many times each day, thy will be done. We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We don't tire so easily. We're not burning up energy foolishly as we do when we're trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works. It really does. I'm like, I still get blown away at how well it works, because I forget not only like in that state of compulsive overeating and all of that, I forget how bad it sucked the last time I ate. So I'm pull myself up by my bootstraps, left my own devices without a spiritual experience. I'm white knuckling and I'm trying to diet again, only to fail again, right? That I don't have power to stop myself. This, it's kind of weird too, is I forget how well this program works too. I forget how faithful the God of my understanding is too. So for me, when they say this is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition, it's absolutely fact. I don't have to have tomorrow figured out. I don't have to have, I don't have to over plan. Yes, do I plan? To a certain extent, my food. Do I wait for me? I'm not saying that it's right or wrong for the techniques people use with, how they got to structureize the way they eat or not eat or whatever. But I know that for me, the use of weighing and measuring and the use of a structured food plan and the use of food committal and prayer and the steps and the fellowship, I need all of it. I do prepare, but I've got to be careful and honest with myself. I can get into that over-preparation to where all I'm thinking about constantly is the next meal. And it's like, oh, my God, I didn't get abstinent to constantly think about what I'm going to continue to eat next. But I do. And I'm relying on the God of my understanding to enable me to plan and prepare the way he would have me. And it doesn't become a burden. I enjoy it now. Right now, the thing, another thing that happened with me is there are foods now that I would never have considered touching prior to this way of life. I've got more variety now than I ever did before. But yet on the outside looking in, how I used to look at it. It was, oh my God, you're on a food plan. It's so restrictive. You know, my God, you can't have this and that, you know, this kind of, and I have people look at me like that, but then they see what I eat and they're like, oh my God, that looks so good. You know, I went to a meeting yesterday. I'm warming up my food that I took with me and they're like, that smells amazing. And I'm like, yeah, it's, you know, pretty simple actually. And they're like, that's, oh my God, you know, this kind of stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. It works, you know, whatever. Anyway, and I've been able to maintain a normal size, a healthy body weight. In fact, a body weight way less than I ever thought was possible through the starvation techniques and the diet pills and the bulimia. I mean, seriously, like, God is doing for me what I can't do for myself. And I can't explain to you how amazing and miraculous the fact is that I'm able to actually stick with the food plan. I cannot do that left to my own devices. I absolutely cannot. For me, the first evidence of an entire psychic change is the fact that I do not want those foods anymore. In fact, I can intuitively tell, like if I go out to a restaurant or something, I'm not against restaurants. You know, I my husband loves to eat in restaurants. We go to restaurants. But for me, I do my homework. You know, I try not to be an imposition to the people around me and make a big production of what I can eat and what I cannot eat, you know. But what I do to the very best of my ability is to say I'll call the restaurant or I'll look on the website and I'll look at the menu options and I'll try to keep it really, really simple. And, you know, and I'll call ahead of time and I'll make sure that I know what to order when I get there and stuff. And you know, I would be dishonest if I were to sit here and say, yeah, some of this stuff's a pain in the butt. Like, I really wish sometimes I could just go and not worry about it and just trust God, right? Well, part of me trusting God is taking these actions. It creates more humility in me because the fact is I am different. And I'm bodily and I'm mentally different from a normal eater. You know, someone who is in a wheelchair who has lost their legs, they need the wheelchair to get around, right? So that they can be a part of society and be a part of, you know, family get-togethers and stuff. They need a wheelchair ramp. That building that they go to needs to be handicap accessible. You know, the restaurant's not going to reach out to them and say, you know, it's my responsibility. I got to do these things. And in so doing, I get the rewards of seeing that I'm cared for and protected. You know, there was another time, too, that I was in, I went on a little weekend trip with my husband to Nashville, and I did my homework. I looked at the website. Called the restaurant about the certain ingredients. And when I got there, I just had an uneasy feeling. And so I asked the dude that took my order, and I said, so what are the ingredients? Does this food have this, that, and the other in it? No, 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 no. And I'm like, okay. That food came out, I took a bite, and I was like, dang, something's not right. I don't know. I went and I asked, does this have this, this, and this in it? No, 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 no. And I'm like, okay, maybe I'm wrong. You know, I'm wrong, often quite wrong. He said, but hang on, let me go double check. And I'm like, oh God. He goes and double checks, and he's like, yeah, that's like in there. And I'm like, wow, thank you, God. So in that moment, I was able to thank God, even though I was terrified. I put the food down, and then, I mean, immediately, I started getting text messages from sponsees. I texted my sponsor, and I'm like, oh, my God, this is what happened. She's like, don't worry. It happens. It's beyond your control. You did everything you could, you know. And I get texts from people. I mean, at random. Like, it got me out of me. You know, I have structure, and then there's grace. Thank you, God. But I did my work. I did everything I could, and there's some things that are just absolutely beyond my control. Now, as far as continuing on with this way of life and living day by day, Is it always rainbows and butterflies? Nope. Life gets lifey. You know, there are fears that crop up. There's stuff that crops up. There's the, you know, but there's a way to deal with it now. I can pause and I can pray. Follow the directions in the big book. Stay present. Understand that the stuff that goes in, just because it goes through my head doesn't mean it's real. Just because I feel something doesn't mean it's real. It's always about pausing, and checking and asking for the right thought or action and being willing to take a different direction, even though I can be convinced that the direction that I believe I might have been led to go was the right thing. There may be a detour that I may need to take. And it's, you know, the God of my understanding operates in real time. Real time, right here, right now. And I cannot see the whole picture, but I'm willing to trust moment by moment that the God of my understanding sees stuff that I can't and has nothing but my best interest at heart. That's the kind of understanding and relationship with a higher power that I've gained through the practice of the 12 steps. And who knew that I'm allowed to enjoy food? I never thought that I could enjoy food and be done with it when the meal is over. And guess what? Once that meal is over, in a few hours, guess what? I get to eat again. I don't have to starve. You know, foods like beets. If you'd knocked me over with a feather, I would have never touched a beet. You know, now I love beets. Like, not you know, straight up organic, you know, beets, but whatever. And vegetables. I wouldn't touch a vegetable before. You know, and for me, and look, I'm not saying that everybody's got to go eat vegetables or that you can't ever eat a processed food or anything like that. I know that for me, a lot of the times when I would get on these meetings, I would hear people talk about specific foods that they cannot eat. Oh, well, this one over here doesn't eat that. Oh, I must be doing it all wrong, and I need to throw the baby out with the bathwater and start all over. No, everyone I've talked to, there is not a single person on here that has the same exact food plan that I've noticed. And one of the most wonderful things my sponsor had told me is everybody's a little different. You know, and one of the things I've learned is, yeah, we are all bodily and mentally different, but I'm not that bodily and mentally different from you. You know, there are certain things that some people can have that I can't, and there's certain things that can have that other people can't. And it's all about, you know, having the courage and asking my higher power for the courage to stay rigorously honest about what works and what doesn't work. And if it's working, keep doing it. Because I'm like the one that's like prone to so much self-sabotage. Like if it's working, it's feeling good. I'm the one that I've got to be worried about something in order to feel okay a lot of times. Like if things are going good, see, I'm not used to things going good all the time. I'm used to messing up all the time. I'm used to a past where it's been a train wreck. And so the tendency left to my own devices is to go back to what is known, even though it's horrible, right? Rather than live in the good stuff that the God of my understanding wants to provide, because there's a lie in my head that says, you don't deserve this. Who are you to be beautiful and happy? Who are you to receive blessings after all the stuff you've pulled? Who are you to have anything worthwhile in life? Look at your inventory. Look at what you've done and who you are and what you became. That is a lie from the pits of hell. That is my ego that tries to tell me that I should have the power to be and do different. The matter is, I wasn't created to live life on my own. I was created to depend on a power greater than myself and let that power demonstrate his love and mercy through me to those around me. And to be honest, I get to be honest. I get to be real today. I get to be vulnerable. I get to not be bloated. I get to go to bed with a belly that's satisfied, not stuffed. I get to wake up in the morning. I get to be hungry and say, you know what? I get to eat my breakfast. I get to pray. I get to be grateful. I get to call and talk about the stuff that's going on with my life with people who truly understand. I get to make real friends and real connections. It's better than any bite I've ever taken. And I think at this point right now, I am about out of juice. I want to thank you guys for having me. I want to thank A Vision for You and the people who started this meeting years ago for following that inspiration, that intuitive thought, because you created a safe place for me to land. You created a place for people like me to show up and find the solution to my problems. I get to live a life beyond my wildest dreams today, even though it's simple and quiet. And for that, I could not be more grateful. And I think I'm going to pass. Thank you so much, Larry. Thanks, everybody. That's it.
Oh, thank you, Shanna. Yeah, Shanna, thank you for your heartfelt, very authentic presentation this morning. We're so appreciative. It was truly helpful to us, and we so appreciate the generous devotion of your time this morning. So stick around. We're going to have a question and answer period, but stick around afterwards. We're going to get Shanna's contact information after the recorded portion of the presentation. Let me give you the share ID number for Shanna's presentation this morning. That number is 21,666. That's 21666. And now we're going to transition to, if you have a question for Shanna C this morning, what I want you to do is press star 1, give me your first name and last initial, and we'll pose questions only, please. Who has a question for Shanna?
Joe F.
Connie
R. Felicia S. from New Jersey.
Felicia.
Yeah.
Was that Nick? Let me tell you who I heard so far. I think the first person I heard was Joe, but I may have gotten that wrong. I did hear Pete.
Yes.
I heard Anayeta. Was that Joe? Okay. So hang tight, and if everyone would mute at this point so I can give the rest of the names I heard. We'll have time this morning for other questions. I heard Joe, I heard Pete, I heard Hanayeta, Felicia, and I believe I heard Nick. So is there anybody else in this first round? Maybe we'll take a couple more.
Jane S., New Hampshire.
Jane?
Liz M.
Okay, and we'll stop with Liz. So here's our rundown. We've got Joe, Pete, Hanayeta, Felicia, Nick, Jane, and Liz, and then we'll see where we're at after that. So the first question is going to come from Joe, followed by Pete. Joe, good morning.
Thank you. Usually I'm not the first person to ask the question, so I'm a bit nervous. What really resonated with me was, and the question is, how did she break through trying to show people how she had it all together?
Thank you so much for the question. I'm not cured of that. Oh, my God. I'll just tell you, I'm not cured of that. There's this constant, I still have an ego. But what happens is I'm more aware of when that stuff is cropping up and how I'm able to be more aware of it.
Shanna, press star 1, please.
Yeah, we think we lost you there, Shanna. Press star 1.
Hey, did I cut off?
We heard a little bit of it, Shanna. Yeah, I think we were muting the lines. Yeah.
That's strange. Okay. All right. Like I said, I'm not cured of that need to prove that I'm okay. That stuff crops up, but what happens now is I'm aware of it, you know, and when it crops up, I'm able to pray and say, okay, this is the stuff again. I see this has just resulted in fear. My need to prove myself and to be act like I'm okay all the time or whatever comes from the lie that I should not have feelings. I should not be afraid. I should be cured by now. And I get afraid because that's not true. I'm not cured of the spiritual malady that causes me to be human. You know, and that need to be liked, that need to be accepted and all of that stuff. I believe that those are innate things that are endowed to us by our creator. But my problem is with me living, you know, selfish and self-centered to the extreme without a spiritual way of living. I take that stuff to the extreme and I demand more attention. I demand without realizing it, I become that needy person that needs you to pay attention, they need you to love me, and when you don't, I retaliate. And so when that stuff crops up, because I can see it through having taken inventory, like in the steps and stuff, I'm able to see it, and I'm able to ask God to remove that stuff, ask for the right thought or action, talk about it, and take different course of action. So as I follow the directions out of the big book, when these things crop up, that is actually me actively putting my trust and faith in a power greater than myself by taking those spiritual actions. I didn't know that. For the longest time, I thought, well, following directions out of the big book is so legalistic. It's not, you know, no, those are actual spiritual actions that when taken, I'm surrendering by following those directions. It's a cool thing. So that's how, it's a daily thing. And when that stuff crops up, I'm reminded that unless I take those directions, I'm going to suffer. It's going to get worse. And I don't like suffering anymore. I don't like pain. So I try to get out of that stuff pretty quickly. And helping someone else usually, you know, and here's the deal. Whenever I'm helping someone, my self-esteem improves. And I feel better about myself. So if I'm actually helping someone, and I'm asking God to help me forget about me, that's another thing I do now. I've learned to do is, God, please enable me to forget about me here. Please grant me the willingness and ability to pray only for knowledge of your will and power to carry that out. And I used to think that was so pious. When people would say that, I'd be like, yeah, whatever. But I actually feel better when that happens, when I pray that. It's the truth. And I can trust that I only need knowledge of the God, my understanding, his will for me, and power to carry that out. And when I'm doing that, praying that with those motives, I tend to be pretty spiritually okay. Anyway, that was a long answer to a short question, so hopefully that helps.
Thanks for the question, Joe. Okay, next up we have Pete, followed by Hannah Yetta. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning, Larry. Thanks for taking the meeting. It's good to hear you. My name is Pete B. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I'm recovered today by God's grace and mercy. So, Shanna, I so appreciate your passion and the emotion that always comes out of you when you share. It's always, you know, super. It's great for me, but I got to be honest. Hearing the accent made my heart hurt this morning. Just my connection to that part of the country where you live is so. But in any case, so here's my question. Have you ever had an instance in your recovery where all of the external resources that we rely on are giving you guidance to do something that you absolutely know your heart doesn't want? And how were you able to discern whether or not you were following God's will or you were following direction from other people? And how did you discern the two?
Oh, Pete, you're awesome. Thank you for the question. I take the action and see if it works. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, if it blows up, there's lessons learned. If it's great, it's great. That's the simplest way I can answer. I don't know how to answer that, you know, other than I'm praying and I make the best decision I can based on the information I'm given in the moment. Sometimes my feelings are off. Sometimes they're on. So things work out like a domino effect, like boom, 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 boom. Sometimes I got to wait. But one of the things that really helps me is over and over and over and over and over again that the God of my understanding never changes. And when all else fails, hell or high water, job, no job, wife, no wife, husband, no husband, house, no house, I simply do not recover if I place dependence upon people, including myself, ahead of dependence upon my Creator. And that's talked about that in working with others, right? You know, on page 100, you know, I do know that when I'm helping someone else, when I'm taking these steps and I'm taking these actions, I know that somehow, it's unbeknownst to me, mistakes and all, there are things that just work out in my favor that I can't even explain. Like, but the passage in this big book that I'm reminded of, and it carried me through, especially early on in recovery, you know, is that what I just quoted is, that, and it's dependent upon his relationship with God. We have seen men get well whose families have not returned at all. We've seen others slip when the family come back too soon. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Whew. Sorry. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. So, that's the best way I can answer that one. Thanks so much for the question, Pete. You're awesome.
All right, Hanayeta, Shanna or no Shanna, you're up next with a question. Followed by Felicia. Good morning.
Hi. Hi, Larry. Thank you. What was my name?
Hanayeta, right? Good morning.
Hi, this is Hanayeta from Texas. And Tana, thank you. It was wonderful. Your words were excellent. But more than that, thank you so much for sharing your tears and your laughter, because that's what touched me the most. And like I said, your words were wonderful. So the extra was awesome. My question, you talked about being on diet pills and laxatives, which was my life for a long time. How old were you when you started doing that? And how long and how did you get off? That's my question for you.
Oh, thank you so much. Okay, so how did I get on the diet pills and like, okay, well, I was in high school. I want to say I was around a sophomore in high school. And at that time I had a weight problem up until I was in seventh grade. I started playing basketball. And then when I started playing basketball, I hit puberty and grew. I had what is apparently called a glow up, what the kids call, you know, whatever. I went from being made fun of by teachers or a teacher in sixth grade for my weight and relentlessly bullied. And I'm not saying that poor me, I'm just saying that's what happened. And then the following year I lost all this weight and I looked great. And what happened was, oh my God, I got to hold on to this. Because now people are paying attention to me and I feel like I'm valuable now. My greatest dream has come true is I'm thin now and people are telling me how beautiful I am. So that fear crept in. And it was a fear of losing what I had, right? And I was willing to go to any length to make sure I was okay from that point forward. And what okay meant for me, as long as I looked good, everything was going to be okay. And everybody stayed off my back. You know, it wasn't enough that I played sports and no one was picking on me about my weight anymore. But the fear drove me to, you know, by the time I was a sophomore in high school, I was exercising like crazy. And then a friend of mine said, ooh, if you take, you know, laxatives or whatever, it works. And I started trying it. And the next thing you know, all 4 years through high school, from sophomore year to senior year, I'm eating these things like candy. On top of taking back then ephedra, which was, you know, allowed back then, it has since been banned. So I was eating those, and it was, you know, helping me, you know, have energy to play basketball at a, you know, whatever. I stayed pretty thin with all the over-exercising, laxative use, and diet pills. And so by the time I got to college, I was still, you know, doing this, and my mom caught me eating a box of laxatives, and I blew her off and acted like she was crazy for calling me out. And I made myself really bad sick. I ended up having to go to the hospital freshman year of college because of it. And so I kind of stopped doing that. I got to that naturally somehow. Now, even back then, before recovery and everything, I got to that point I couldn't take a laxative ever because they made me sick. Like I couldn't, even to this day, the thought of one makes me want to vomit. I cannot do it. So that was, I think, a gift. So I didn't take laxatives anymore. But what I did try to do was take a medication that you back then could get over the counter to make yourself vomit, like it's for people who accidentally ingest poison. And I think that's been taken off the shelves now too, but I tried that and I did that once or twice and it was so violent, I couldn't do that anymore. So from those points, I have not taken the laxatives, I haven't taken the stuff, and I don't make myself, and it was never able to do that. And I was, you know, I would over-exercise back then, but then I got to the point where I was like, I've never since then been that much of an over-exerciser. So those are kind of things that kind of have been just set aside. So it wasn't like I had to really struggle to overcome that stuff. I worked the steps. I see that that's not a solution. That was something for me was pretty easy to let go and removed. But for me, that's just been my experience. So it's not been I've worked the steps. I stay in 10, 11, and 12. You know, that stuff was kind of removed even really before recovery, honestly. So, but I know that a lot of people struggle with that to this day. And that's a thing that, you know, as an individual, they need to address. So just because it was like that for me doesn't mean it's like that for everybody. That's it.
Okay, next up with a question, we have Felicia followed by Nick. Felicia, good morning.
Thank you so much, Chip, for your talk and for everybody who makes this meeting possible. My question is, Shannon, what is your current morning and evening spiritual routine? How do you nourish yourself spiritually today through the 11th step?
Well, thank you for asking. It's a pretty personal thing. I believe everybody's is a little different. But I'll just share. It's the basic skeleton program there that's outlined in pages 84 through 88. You know, the key is being honest about how I'm connecting with the God of my understanding and what feels, you know, nourishing to me, you know, and there's no rules there, but there is a structure that I do follow. And for me in the morning, I wake up and I do ask the God of my understanding to keep me sober, abstinent, and sane, and for the willingness and the ability to stick with this food plan and to live by spiritual principles. The food plan is sort of a fluid thing. I have a nutritionist that, you know, I've spoken with and consulted. And it's about being honest about what's really working and what isn't, and being willing to, you know, be courageous enough to make changes where changes need to be made, regardless of how I feel about them. And it's okay to feel good too. It's okay to enjoy food. It's okay to be hungry, and it's okay to feel good after you eat a meal. You know, you get satisfied when your belly's full. I mean, when your body needs nourishment and it gets nourished,
Shanda, I think try to press star one again, Shanda. We may have muted you.
I have no idea why that keeps coming off.
You know, it's our end. Yeah, it's our nothing you did. Nothing you did at all, but we can hear you.
Okay. All righty. But yeah, that in and of itself is okay. So in the morning, I wake up and I pray that. and I read pages 84 through 88. Surprisingly, you would think I would have the whole thing memorized by now because I've been doing it for years. But it is a comfort. It's a reminder. This is what my primary purpose is to stay spiritually fit so I can carry a message of hope to those who need it and want it, the person who still suffers. And so, you know, I pray, and for me, I pray the third step prayer through all the way up to the 12-step prayer, you know, and it's all included in there, you know, third and seventh mainly. And I ask, you know, realizing I'm surrounded by people who are perhaps spiritually sick, I ask God to save me from being angry and how I can be helpful and help me to be honest with myself and, you know, lead me in the way of, honesty, humility, open-mindedness, and willingness. And I pray the set-aside prayer quite often, you know, and then seventh step, and then eight, you know, where I mess up, help me to see where I mess up and help me to make amends, you know, and repair damage quickly, you know, and to continue to take that personal inventory. And throughout the day, I'm talking to God, praying, 10-stepping when I need to, case by case, moment by moment, one step at a time. And then at night, I do my nightly review. Well, I'm back up in the mornings. I also do a set of personal, you know, the big book talks about how we make use of what religious people have to offer, and it's totally optional. You know, you have to necessarily be a member of a church like that, but there's some literature that I like to read and some stuff that I like to do and meditative type of things that I like to do, you know, the God of my understanding. It's a comfort. And anyway, at night, I do my nightly review. Some nights it's, you know, most nights it's pretty clean. I answer the questions. There's some direct questions. A lot of times you can download an app. I do an app on my phone that has the questions straight out of the big book, and I can plug in answers as whatever. Some days are full. Some days are pretty clean and empty, but not a big deal. It doesn't take me hours to do this. And I send it to my sponsor. Big Book does not say you need to email your nightly review every night to your sponsor. It doesn't say that. But what it does say is, we discuss this stuff with someone immediately, you know, if things crop up. And so I know that if I'm sending that to my sponsor, I've done my part in getting it out there. And I don't know, it just helps me. And then I'm able to sleep better at night, and I wake up and do the same thing over and over, and things come and go. And that's what my days are. That's it.
All right. Thanks for the question, Felicia. Okay, next up we have Nick, followed by Jane. Nick, good morning.
Good morning, family. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Girl, you made me shout. You made me cry. To the get-tos, I just was jumping up and down. And whew, I can really hear the message of hope. And what I want to know, I guess, kind of like twofold. I heard you talking about being in more than one program. And I want to really know, like, when you have close friends in one program or the same program that you feel God calling you away from to make new friends, like, how do you handle, you know, the ability to now I get to select the people who I want in my life? And not feel guilty or ashamed that you just can't talk in fellowship with everybody in a closed circle. So thank you. I'll pass with that.
Oh, thanks so much for that question. What really popped into my mind and in my heart when you were asking that was, I don't burn bridges. And what came to mind is, I've learned is, there's enough love to go around. You know, if I'm staying close to the God of my understanding, staying in these steps, and I'm, you know, being willing to be helpful wherever I'm at and trusting that God will use me wherever I'm going, then I don't have to worry about cutting people off or whatever. But there, believe me, there are certain people that in my life that aren't the healthiest. And somehow the God of my understanding works it out. Like, for instance, I have a brother that I absolutely love. And I made every effort. I really, really have. And I'm the type of person that will try too hard to make a relationship with someone work. And I will rack my brain. And that will become a great obsession for me because I need you to, you know, I need this relationship to be what it would have, what I would have it be. You know, one of the things that I was instructed to do in relationships with people is surrendering to God. Well, how do I do that? How do I surrender a relationship with God? Well, if you look on page 68, 69, where the sex stuff is, it's not just about like sex. It's about relationships. And it talks about how on page 69, it says, in this way, we try to shape a sane, sound ideal for our future sex life, and substitute sex life with relationships, right? We subjected each relation to this test, was it selfish or not? So again, I'm taking inventory. The thing I was instructed to do is, God, ask, please mold my ideals and my relationship with these people and help me to live up to them. Oh my gosh. Like, God is relational. Like, he cares about this relationship too. And understanding that my God cares about that relationship that I have with that person too. You know, I'm not managing that anymore either. It's okay, God, mold my ideals with this person and enable me to live up to them, all right? And it says, we remembered always that our powers were God-given, therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised or loathed. Whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided we do not bring about still more harm in so doing. In other words, we treat relationships as if we would any other problem. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. Do we really want it? You know, it's like, you know, and how do I know if I really want it? Well, I'm just like, okay, you know what, God, let it be what it is. And that's hard for me because my mind always comes up with an outcome. So letting the outcome and letting it be and just showing up, understanding that I don't have to have all the answers and I don't have to fix it all. Just show up with a helpful and forgiving spirit. God, help me show up with a helpful and forgiving spirit no matter what. Easier said than done, which is, you know, I don't have the power to do that of myself, but God will give me that answer if I really want it. So anyway, that's it.
All right. Next up with the question is Jane, followed by, we'll wrap it up with Liz. Jane, good morning.
Yes, good morning. My name is Jane S., and I'm here in New Hampshire. Grateful to be back here with you all. And I'm in my steps right now, in the middle of sharing my step 5. So I'm grateful to be here. Shauna, thank you so much for your share. I so relate to your struggle with having the realization and the awareness that you needed to be in two programs. And I know you said you don't get to manage the two programs today, but that God guides you. But what does a week look like in your life today in regards to helping and being of service with God in two different programs?
Thank you again for that question. It looks like a daily walk. Sometimes I'm helping more people in one program. Sometimes I'm helping people in the other program. I do have my home group, and I try to attend the meetings and stuff as I can. But I'm relying on God. I'm taking and making outreach calls. It just depends. It just depends, like, throughout the day. I do have a plan, but I also have a loose grip on that plan because realize plans can change because my tendency is to be so rigid. So rigid. I mean, there's structure and then there's rigid. And there are people that have talked with me that a lot of people would consider part of a very rigid, structured way of doing this thing that they're like, dang, you're really, really rigid. But anyway, so my tendency, I have to relax a lot. And so anyway, for me, there is structure. There's plans, but I'm relying on God to enable me to carry those plans out. And if those plans change, then being willing to be flexible and not try to control everything and not react, you know, in fear, but just trusting that I, you know, I'm powerless, but I'm not, I can tap into power anytime I need. That resource is there within me. And I don't have to react when I don't get my way or things don't go as I want all the time. Does that make sense? Like, so anyway, the two programs, you know, like I said, I'm helping some more, you know, one day I may be helping more in one program. The other day I may be helping others in the other program. I may make 5 outreach calls on one day. I may make 2 on the other. I may spend an hour on one. I may spend 5 minutes on another. It just depends. It's real time. It's just showing up. That's it.
All right. Next up with the question, we have Liz. Liz, good morning.
Good morning. This is Liz from Rhode Island. Excuse me. So I've been in program for a long, long time, and I have a good amount of abstinence. I've worked the steps in the big book. I've struggled with faith in a higher power, but I learned to act as if when I don't have it. I pray even if I don't know who I'm praying to or I don't 100% believe it, and it does work. And here's my question. You read a quote, I think it's on page 99 in the big book, and it says, so I'm going to paraphrase, something like, when we turn our lives over to a power greater than ourselves, we will be amazed that God has in store more than we could have ever expected, something like that. My faith is weaker because I see so many people in the world that are suffering with wars and poverty and just really, really bad suffering. I am very grateful for my life. But because of so much suffering, that quote, which I love, I don't really believe because I see so much suffering. So I'm wondering, and I know this is a big philosophical kind of question, but I'm wondering if you have reconciled that or if you think of that sometimes. So thank you.
Oh, awesome question. Thank you. I understand completely. You know, if I look at all the stuff, and there are times where it's like, I cannot believe I get to live the life that I get to live. And there's so many people suffering. And I can't understand why some people get it and some people don't, and why some people will. I don't know. All I know is for whatever reason in my little section of the world, in my little section of God's universe, I get to live a life free from the worry and the burden of having to figure out all of it. And I know that for me, it took me a while to understand that I will actually take and start worrying about all the problems of the world and all of that with the best intentions, but actually become twisted around, and I will use it as an excuse not to rely on God. So for me, when I see the suffering, when I get afraid, when I don't understand, that's when I do, you know, more prayer. You know, God, please grant everyone everything they need spiritually, mentally, physically, and emotionally. You know, at least I.
Yeah.
And what happens for me is the prayer changes me. Even if it doesn't change the situation, my reaction to the situation changes. So I may not necessarily get like a lot of tangible things happen. You know, those promises there in that paragraph on page 100 doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get a bunch of tangible stuff. For me, it's the change in the perspective. You know, how valuable are we that we are given this opportunity, that there are thousands and millions of people suffering from this, and yet those of us on this line today get this opportunity to hear and be guided to a power that can really help us. How valuable are we? You know, that our experience can actually help someone else not feel alone in the world anymore. You know, what a gift. That's the kind of stuff that I think this paragraph may be referring to. So to sum it up, for me, I got to do what I got to do in my little section and stick to my primary purpose and let God take care of whatever else needs to be taken care of. So that's it.
Hey, thanks for the question, Liz. And Shanna, thanks so much again. You just did a beautiful job this morning carrying the message, and we're so grateful for your generous use of your time. So stick around. We're going to, as we close, we're going to ask Shanna for her contact information. So stick around for that. And we're going to close the meeting with the reading from page 164 in the chapter called The Vision for You. So I'm going to do that now. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road to happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.